Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, how to live toxic free. And we do that because there's so many toxic chemicals out there. But what we need to do is see the world through toxic free glasses. And I had this idea the other day that it's like, you know, if you were to say, walk down the street and only look at people who are wearing red shirts. You would walk down the street and you'd be able to see a red shirt because you know what the color red is if you weren't colorblind. But most people know what the color red is. And if you gain the ability to understand what is toxic and what is toxic free, you can go through the world and say, this is toxic free, this is toxic, this is toxic free, this is toxic. And that's what my work is about, is being able to help you recognize what is toxic free and the things that you can do to reduce your toxic exposures and to eliminate toxic chemicals from your body. Today is Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and the sun is shining, and we're going to be talking about designing a toxic-free home today. My guest is Lisa K. Tharp, founder of K. Tharp Design, and I've been looking at Lisa's website as I've been waiting for the show to start. I looked at it before, but I've just been kind of browsing through it this morning. Her work has been featured in, her toxic-free work has been featured in over a dozen mainstream design magazines in the last 2 years. Her work is beautiful. In fact, I chose a photo of one of her designs to be on the homepage of my website, and she also understands what it means to be toxic-free. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your nice words about my work. Let me return the favor. Your work has been an absolute gift to everyone looking for information on healthy living, and I know I use the Deborah's List regularly when I am checking up on new materials, so thank you for all that you've done for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure, actually. I love doing this. And, you know, when I look at your designs, your taste is just my taste. It's just like I would design something like that. I mean, you choose the same colors and you have the same sensibilities. But before we get into all of that, tell me how, or tell everybody how you got interested in things that are toxic free. How did you get from being an average person who has no awareness of these issues into doing what you're doing?
Well, there's always a particular pivotal event, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
I always, since I was a child, had a great interest in architecture and interior design, but my interest in healthy design came much later. I personally was exposed to toxic and moldy building materials for an extended period of time, and in the years that followed, I noticed that my immune system was really impacted. And this was followed by losing two immediate family members, both younger than me, to cancer. And it was at that point I decided, you know, something is really wrong, and I need to take action. And I wasn't sure at the time how to go about it, but I just started learning all that I could about creating a healthier indoor environment. And I was frankly astounded at the simple things that are within our power to do. It's just we need the information.
Yes.
And so I took that information and decided to actually build a healthy house, not only for my own family, but also to model best practices and use as many non-toxic materials as possible. So we built the Concord Green Healthy House, and I figured that so many others could benefit from all of the time I spent doing the research and learning, and so I set up a blog, Concord Green, to blog about the journey along the way and feature many of the materials and design features that I was learning about and incorporating into the design. And now I'm able to, you know, help my clients make their homes healthier too and try and do it as much as possible. I'm always suggesting ways that you can improve the health of your home.
I'm really impressed with how you've integrated the whole idea of using non-toxic materials with the other principles of how you design, like bringing nature indoors and the colors that you use and vernacular design and things. So give us an overview of what your design philosophy is.
Well, I do believe that we can learn a lot from our past when things were simpler. And, you know, when you think about our ancestors, they built with deep respect for nature. They did not have the ability to turn on a thermostat switch. So they had to orient their homes towards the warm summer sun on the southern exposure and shield themselves from the northern winds with positioning their homes near shade trees for summer shade and evergreens for winter wind protection, these kinds of things. And those are just examples. That's a northeast example. Of course, in southern climates, that's the opposite would be true. But the idea that so much of our history in building science and in design is very reflective of nature's realities. And the more we start to move away from that and make things a little bit overly complex, the more difficult things become. And I think that's true with most things
yes,
in life.
But, I think so too.
But in design, you know, my designs tend to, I talk about the luxury of simplicity, that you don't need so much. You need to smartly design your spaces so that you have good storage where you need it, comfortable furniture, but no more than what you need. And we set out to try and prove that that simplicity can still be lovely and beautiful and comfortable. It does not have to be Spartan. I also love to reclaim and reuse things that are in good condition and are not moldy, repurpose things. You know, I've done antique work tables as a bath vanity, stuck some sinks in it, for example. So my philosophy is that it's got to be non-toxic as possible, be a guard at your door, and figure out what is safe to bring into your home. Treat your home like your sanctuary, which is what it should be.
I also like to take old things and make them new in a toxic-free way. One of my favorite things is I used to be married to a man who, we're still very good friends, but I used to be married to a man who was very good with his hands and had all those building and remodeling skills, and that's how I got my house.
Oh.
he didn't build it, but he remodeled it. And I needed an island for my kitchen. And so what we did was we just went out. One of the things we love to do was go to architectural salvage and go to antique stores and just see what kind of old, not moldy things, not toxic things that we could come up with and make them into something new. And the kitchen island in my kitchen is made from an old Singer sewing machine table. That it didn't have the sewing machine in it anymore, but it had these good iron legs, and it still has the pedal on it. Mm-hmm. And so it's this great conversation piece, you know, and we put a new top on it, and I just love it. I just love it.
Well, it's great, and it's a one-of-a-kind, and that's
it is
the other
a one-of-a-kind.
Nice thing about it.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
And you have a story and a memory associated with that piece, and that's, you know, it's Taking as much and putting your own personality and your own interest into your home is the best possible way to create a sanctuary that really reflects who you are. And the flip side, of course, is that you do, to your point about not moldy, we have to be very careful when we're salvaging. I got in trouble once on a project using a desk that was antique that turned out to be toxically moldy, and the painter, his assistant, accidentally belt sanded it and spewed lead dust and moldy spores everywhere. It was pretty much a disaster. So you have to be very careful.
Okay.
You know, it's a good thing to try and reuse things, but you do have to put your health at the first priority.
I think so too, and I think that that's one of the things There's this big emphasis environmentally on reuse, but if we just reuse everything indiscriminately, we will end up running into a lot of toxic things. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lundad, and my guest today is Lisa K. Tharp, interior designer. She's the founder of K. Tharp Design. And when we come back, we'll be talking about some toxic things that are found in interior design products that you want to watch out for. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lundad, and my guest today is Lisa K. Tharp, founder of K. Tharp Designs. And she does very beautiful toxic-free designs. You might want to go take a look at her website, which is ktharpdesign.com. Lisa, before the break, we were talking about watching out for some toxic things like lead and mold in materials that we might reuse for design. Tell us about some other toxic chemicals that you've run into in the past that people should watch out for when they're considering design. Interior design projects.
Sure. There are lots of different categories, but we could probably break them down into a few. One is finishes, so paints and floor finishes, and sorry about that, are all going to be off-gassing if they're typical or traditional types of products. They will off-gas for a period of weeks, months, or even years, well after that new paint smell is gone. There are resins and formaldehyde and adhesives in our furniture, if it's not solid wood, or our kitchen cabinetry. These are all, again, off-gassing and causing issues for the immune system. There are some other things that are considerations that are not materials per se, but are the way our houses mechanically work. Is that okay for me to get into?
Sure. Go ahead.
So anytime we have things that are off-gassing, it is affecting our indoor air quality. But the bigger problem is that we are then spreading the indoor air quality issue mm-hmm. around. And mm-hmm.
Yes, do talk about that.
I point specifically to the wonder of forced hot air and central air conditioning. This, to me, is a central problem in our modern-day house design. During the oil crisis of the 70s, we started trying to be energy efficient without understanding the need for fresh air, so we ziplocked up our homes and tried to seal them tight. Then we turned on the forced hot air and central air conditioning, and now we're blowing whatever particulates, whatever off-gassing, whatever fumes are in our space, we are now making them airborne and easy to breathe. It is my feeling that is one of the main reasons why asthma rates are so on the rise in this country. Furthermore, the ductwork itself is typically a breeding ground mixture of dust and air conditioning condensation. So even if we don't have a mold problem anywhere else in the house, we are probably breeding one in the ductwork, and again, spreading it around by turning on those systems. Another modern convenience is that we've attached our garages to our home, and sometimes we're even sleeping in rooms above our garages, and you just don't want to be sharing indoor air with car exhaust, and that's pretty hard to avoid without, ever parking your – unless you're not parking your car in the garage.
I don't park my car in the garage.
Okay. In fact, a lot of people don't do that.
Another thing that I see, because one of the things that I do is I go to people's homes and do a toxic assessment of them and tell them what's toxic and what they can do about it. A lot of times what I see in homes is that the air intake for the central heating or air system is in the garage. And sitting next to this air intake is pesticide cans and cans of paint and things that are giving off fumes, and it's going right into the house.
Mm-hmm. I mean, things that we grew up with, just assuming it was okay, the gasoline, the open can of gasoline for the lawnmower, and you know, all of these things that we got used to growing up in a time when plastics were big and polyester was the miracle fabric, these are all things that we got accustomed to. And of course you put pesticides on the lawn. That's how you get a green lawn. So it's a bit about stepping back and saying, let's go back to a simpler time and see what we can learn. Mm-hmm. And can we use simpler materials? Can we use simpler materials for our mattress? You know, does it have to be filled with polyurethane foam and flame retardant that we're breathing in every night? Or can we use organic cotton, wool, natural latex? You know, these are all options for us that are all healthier than the typical mattress products that are being sold to us. So it's about stepping back and just really thinking. And once you do that, it starts to become quite easy. And then it's just a matter of looking around and saying, what resources are available to me? How do I substitute out the toxic floor finish for something that's safe? Or the paint? It's just a matter of making a little bit of advanced planning preparation, and then you can solve most of these problems pretty easily.
I find that it's pretty easy to solve them, too. And I've been doing this for more than 30 years. And 30 years ago, it was a lot more difficult to find these products. But now today, there are, of course, specialty products that you have to get online or from a specialty boutique store. But even places like Home Depot and Lowe's, you can go and buy a less toxic paint or, you know, some of these supplies. I have a rug in my hallway, a 100% wool rug that I just bought at Home Depot. Not just, I bought it 12 years ago at Home Depot, but it's not impossible to find these things in mainstream stores now. You just need to know where to be looking and what to look for. So things have changed a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of two levels of action. The first is the building envelope itself, and that is, I don't want to minimize that. Not everyone has a chance to build a house from scratch. And they have an HVAC system currently in their home. And so people say to me, well, what do I do with my existing situation? And there are things one can do, and we can talk more about that as if you like in some detail. But there, you know, the things that have to do with the building envelope are more complex. But again, there are things even there that you can do, even without leaving your current home.
I find that, too. In fact, I love to take old houses and fix them up. We need to go to break, but we'll talk about all the great things that you can do with the building envelope and inside the rooms when we come back with Lisa K. Tharp. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Lisa K. Tharp, founder of K. Tharp Design, and her website is ktharpdesign.com, and she does beautiful toxic-free interior design. So, Lisa, let's talk about design now and the solutions that you've come up with. And we could talk a lot about toxic chemicals and safer materials, but first I want to ask you, how, if at all, does design choices play into being a solution for making things less toxic?
And when you say design choices, are you talking about interior?
I'm not talking about materials. I'm not talking about materials, but I'm asking, I don't know the answer to this question. Is it possible that making choices that have to do with design choices could then reduce a toxic exposure? Like I'm thinking of, for example, if you put a window on a south-facing wall,
then so building design.
You wouldn't have to, you know, it would help bring in heat, or mm-hmm. and you would have to use less
mechanical
light bulbs, you know.
Yes. And
so both in the building design and in choices that you might make it with furnishings, mm-hmm. Are there design choices that could be made that would give a less toxic result? Like maybe you would make a choice to use a material that you wouldn't have to then paint or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Yes, absolutely. So on the building envelope itself, if you research just a little bit about passive design, you'll understand that heating and cooling as much as possible without mechanical means is the best way to go. So, yes, if you're in a northern climate, most of your windows should be on the southern side of the house. If you can build near large shade trees for that are deciduous, so they drop their leaves in the summer they drop their leaves in the winter, so they let all the sun in, and they shade the home in the summertime, that's all great. So as much as you can do passively as possible. And then, mechanically, I would do everything you can to avoid blowing systems. So I recommend hot water radiant or radiators. So this is underfloor is the radiant, and radiators, there are modern radiators that are nothing like the steam clunkers that you think of at your, you know, older homes. Mm-hmm. I would make sure that you order them uncoated, because some of them are coated with epoxies that continue to off-gas when the hot water hits them.
Mm-hmm.
For air conditioning, ceiling fans are a wonderful choice, box fans, portable fans. But if you do really want air conditioning, I recommend either putting in a window AC unit here or there, or using the newer ductless air conditioning. These are mini splits, they're called. All of this is detailed on the blog that I was writing. That's ConcordGreen.blogspot.com. There are articles on all of these choices and resources to learn more.
I'm going to go look at that, your article, especially about air conditioning, because I'm faced with an air conditioning dilemma at this point in time. Living in Florida, you really have to have some kind of air conditioning half of the year. Mm-hmm. And it has as much to do with humidity as heat.
Sure.
And when I moved into this house, I had an old clunker air conditioner that has been on its last legs ever since. And I just, right now, I don't have air conditioning. It's fine because it's winter. But my thermostat went out, and I'm going to have to get a new thermostat. But soon, I'm going to have to get a new air conditioner. And to get a whole house air conditioner is thousands and thousands of dollars. And I'm really looking at what can I do instead of that.
Mm-hmm. And you're inviting all sorts of problems that we covered earlier in this conversation. The important thing to avoid in any sort of air conditioning mechanical system is antimicrobial coatings, which have become very popular. Kenmore still offers a window unit that does not have those antimicrobial coatings, which seem to be being used as big marketing slogans, but they're not good for us.
They're especially not good for us. I'm going to be writing about those soon.
Oh, okay. Yes. So if you're heating and cooling as much as possible passively, then with smart mechanicals, bring in as much fresh air as you can. Open the windows if you're in the heat of summer, in the early morning and late at night, to kind of flush the house. If you have the means to, and add in an energy recovery ventilator, that keeps the temperature from going out the window, but it brings fresh air in. Mm-hmm. You can also attach filters to it, HEPA filter for particulates and carbon for off-gassing and fumes. So those are all, again, mechanical things you can do to keep that fresh air coming in that we used to get automatically when our windows were draftier and our doors were draftier. So the other thing I tell people is attics, not basements. If you want bonus space in your home, look up, don't look down. Basements are notorious for humidity and mold. You do need to dehumidify in your basement, even if you don't have flooding. You need to ventilate it, and that can be as simple as hooking up a bathroom-type fan with some sort of small exhaust that's got a screen on it, so no one crawls in, but ventilate your basement. And then do everything you can to disconnect that basement air from the rest of your interior space. So if folks have interior doors to their basement, I tell them to weather strip all around it so that any sort of moisture air is not really mixing. You're trying to minimize the sharing of air from your main living spaces to your basement. And then there are all of the wonderful non-toxic materials that are out there now. Green, I learned, does not necessarily equal healthy. In fact, some of the most difficult insulation choices you can have in your home would be closed-cell insulation. It's the pride and joy of energy efficiency, but it will give you headaches and all sorts of other nasty impacts if you're at all sensitive. So question the necessity of each each chemical that's coming into your home, do I need to seal my dining room table? Or is it fine, you know, that more patinaed look?
Mm-hmm.
Check for any allergens. A lot of people are allergic to the terpenes found in various species of wood, so you do need to seal it. But seal it with something that's non-toxic. Be like a bouncer at the door.
Yeah,
you can't
I like that a lot.
unless you meet
you
certain criteria. And one of my favorite lines, and I don't get paid by them to say this, but ECOS, E-C-O-S, Organics, is a line from the UK that now manufactures here stateside. And they have not only, in my opinion, the best non-toxic paints, they also have non-toxic floor finishes, they have sealers, radiator paints. Their line is terrific.
Yeah, I had them on an interview with them, and they are.
Oh,
I love their line, too. Yeah. We need to go to break, but we'll be right back. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm here with my guest today is Lisa K. Tharp, founder of K. Tharp Design, and that's ktharpdesign.com. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Lisa K. Tharp, founder of K. Tharp Design. And we've been talking about how to create toxic-free interiors, designing a toxic-free home. Lisa, we're in our last segment now, so we only have a short period of time. But I want to make sure that you get a little bit of time to talk about the design aspect, the furnishings aspect.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the building envelope. And then there's another thing that we want to talk about later as well. So let's get this all in.
Okay. Well, I think the first thing I tell folks is to remove wall-to-wall carpeting, if at all possible.
And that's the first thing I say, too.
Okay. So go with bare floors. You can paint them. You can seal them with the non-toxic varnishes. Tile floors, concrete floors. You can do beautiful things. So that's a major area to hit right away. I use all natural textiles whenever possible. I avoid stain treatment. I use solid wood furniture or unfinished, untreated wicker, and I can paint it. I can just send the paint to the manufacturer and have them put non-toxic paint on things. I love using upholstery that is either slip-covered, so it's washable, removable cushions and washable covers. These are all great tricks of the trade to make sure that your home is both comfortable and also safe.
Yes, and there are a lot of materials now. I mean, it just, you know, as I said earlier, 30 years ago when I started, it was really difficult to get these things. But now you can get them. They're just everything that you could need to do an interior on your home, you can do in a toxic-free way. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Absolutely.
It's pretty easy.
It just takes paying attention to it, doing a little bit of research, tapping into all of the folks out there who are moving in this direction with furniture lines and finishes, et cetera.
And even accessories and pillows and all those kinds of little things. There's just, I would say that there's really not a limit on what kind of design you could create and doing it toxic-free. It's not like you have to do it all in beige or anything like that.
That's absolutely true. I think some people think, you know, a lot of green design was very modern looking. And again, with the Conquer Green Healthy House, I set out to try and show that healthy and green design can also look very traditional. I mean, it's a fairly traditional.
It is very traditional, yeah.
Vernacular with a bit of a fresh twist in places, and you do not need to be limited. You just need to do a little bit of extra homework. That's anything is possible.
I would totally agree. So you put together on your blog 5 steps for chemical sensitivity recovery, and I thought that we should talk about that because not only does it apply to people specifically who have immune system problems, but it really is the points that you put together I completely agree with, and I think they apply to anybody who is needing to recover from any kind of chemical damage, and that's just about everybody who lives in our toxic world. And some people are more recovered than others, but we've all been affected. So let's just go through those 5 points.
Sure. I mean, it's the belief that, just like with the architecture, the return to nature, the belief that your body is powerful and that your immune system knows what to do. And why are we having all of these epidemics of, you know, life-threatening food allergies and hypersensitivity and autoimmune disorders, all sorts of things? It's because our immune systems are a bit in overdrive or they're overburdened. So it's all about taking a few simple steps to unburden the immune system and let it do its own job. And I've seen amazing recoveries time and time again. So the step one, which is what we've been focusing on, is creating a safe home environment. So that allows your body to begin a healing process. Step two is physical. It's your body was designed to work. And even if you're bedridden, start doing little things in bed that you can do to make yourself stronger and build up to walking each day, getting outside and getting as much fresh air into your lungs and sweating and absorbing that sunshine. These are critically important parts to the physical aspect of your healing. You'll be stronger, you'll be calmer, and you'll sleep better.
And it also helps. You need to exercise. You need to move your body in order for your body to process and excrete the toxic chemicals that are already in your body. This is a critically important part.
Again, it's just doing what your body was meant to do.
Yes.
And then step number three is nutrition. It's feeding your body the things it was meant to eat. The old eat your vegetables couldn't be more true. Organic vegetables, the more you can put those into your diet and take out the inflammatory foods like dairy, gluten, processed foods, replacing caffeine and alcohol with water, and ultimately taking a quality probiotic to restore gut health. You know, in olden days, they talked about how the gut was the center of an individual's health, and it remains true to this day. So that's a critical, important piece, especially with people who have had illnesses. They probably have been on antibiotics, which is taking away their own digestive tract's ability to fight off disease and chronic illness. And this is the way to restore that fighting power back into your own body.
I agree.
Number four is medical. And this is one where you should rule out anything else that might be going on. And for many people, it's food allergies or Candida albicans, which is an overgrowth of yeast that is fed by the typical American diet of carbs and sugars. It could be leaky gut. It could be something else, but you should just make sure that you run at least the testing for food allergies and Candida to rule those out. And if they are present, and many people, some people think that the majority of Americans have Candida albicans, this yeast overgrowth, once you clear that up, you'd be amazed at how much better everything else is working.
I would agree with you that I think most people have it. I think that toxic chemicals, especially in food and water, when we're drinking chlorinated or water with chlorine or chloramines in it for disinfection, it kills all those microorganisms in your gut. And then Candida just grows and grows and grows and grows. And most people are drinking that water, and they don't even know what's going on in their gut. So the whole thing about gut restoration is, I think, a key factor to the whole recovery from what the chemical damage in your body. Because our bodies are just our poor bodies. I just want to say that if you're being exposed to the typical amount of toxic chemicals that goes on in this country, it's like an onslaught into your body. And so it really is this two-prong approach of reducing the amount of toxic chemicals you're putting into your body, getting your body those toxic chemicals out of your body. And the third thing is this whole restoration project. It really is like a body restoration project.
It is. And that leads us to the fifth step, which I always wondered, why do some people react so much more significantly than others to the same onslaught of toxicity? Why do some people have, you know, just much more extreme situations? And usually it's because they've had one serious exposure that hypersensitized their body. And this led me to the fifth step, which was the mind-body connection. And for a long time, I rejected this idea. I thought there are physical symptoms that people are experiencing. There's no way that this is a mind connection issue. But then I saw several people I trusted in who had claims of chemical sensitivity, full recovery through brain retraining. And the idea of brain retraining is that it retrains the brain's conditioned trigger of physical symptoms that result from a prior toxic exposure. The idea that the ancient part of our brain, the fight or flight instinct, also is attuned to having been exposed to some toxic chemical or mold or whatever it was that got you to be sick in the first place. And the brain recognizes even minute amounts of that in your future and tries to flood your system with adrenaline and re-trigger those same physical symptoms, even if you're not in any real harm at that time. And so there are programs out there, brain retraining, mm-hmm. that actually try and stop the vicious cycle of your brain overreacting, triggering the adrenaline, developing the physical symptoms, and wearing down your immune system. And that I recommend people check out as the fifth and last step in the full recovery program.
I agree that happens, that you know, it's like putting your hand on a fire, on a hot stove, for example. Say you put your hand on a hot stove, then your mind or your brain, however you understand it, it records that, and it says, I need to warn you the next time you come near a hot stove not to put your hand on it or you'll burn it. And, you know, it's just that same kind of mechanism. And so when you get exposed to these toxic chemicals, then your body can react even in the future to very minute amounts to exposures, and it like multiplies. It does have an effect that the mind and the body are interconnected. So I completely agree that the mind has a factor in this. I'm not saying that people who are sensitive to chemicals or who have a reaction to chemicals, that it's completely psychosomatic. These are toxic poisons. These chemicals are poisons, and that there is everything. It recovering from our toxic world really is a multifaceted approach. And that's the end of the show. My goodness.
Okay. thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Lisa Tharp, and she's at ktharpdesign.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dowd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio.